Welcome everybody to the Super Office Podcast. This time we have a special guest. He's been here before and his name is Øyvind Sørvoll. You know, we have number 12 in the world in the ranking of tennis. His name is Casper Ruud and he has a team led by his father. And the analyst is this team is where Øyvind fits in. And he's traveling around with Casper and he's watching tennis and he's preaching about how to improve on the in the sports arena. And he has a lot of experience to share with us. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about how AI is catching up in tennis, but also that you cannot really just rely on the AI. You have to be sensitive and sensible. And the player has to actually perform. But you can use the data and the AI to sort of be prepared and do the right things. It's very interesting. So, well, without further ado, just listen in and I really hope you like it. My name is Hans and I'm the host of the Super Office podcast. And my role here at Super Office has changed since the last time. And now I'm the head of global partner business, and I'll be still hosting the Super Office podcast. Well, listen in, guys. Right, I pressed the record button, and well, once again, hello everybody, and welcome to the Super Office podcast. It's been a couple of weeks since we were here, but today I have a great guest and a friend of the podcast, I might say, Øyvind Sørvoll. He's the analyst in our best tennis players team, Casper Ruud. Welcome, Øyvind.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me again. It will be a pleasure talking to you again and talk about what we have done since last time.
Yeah, that's exciting because you in the sports world are working on improving stuff and we in the business world is improving all the time. And when we you and I discuss, we always come across things that we can learn from each other. And surprisingly, there's a lot of stuff that is quite similar to how to improve things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we learn from you. And most of the time we have in the past, you know, looked into what you do in the business world and learned to see, you know, the structure, the management and all those. But, you know, when we talked the past few years, we also talked about what can the, you know, your life in the business industry, what can you learn from what we do to try to stay on top of the world when it comes to Casper's tennis. And I think that, you know, since we talked last time, I think that we keep finding small marginal gains that, you know, we keep working on to make sure that, you know, Casper is improving all the time. Because otherwise, you know, if you just keep your level and not improve your level, you know, the other ones will pass you on the ranking. So, you know, that's what we will talk about in this session.
Yeah, that's great. And it's like a New Year's resolution. You know, you give yourself some improvement points and then, you know, a week runs and then you've been busy with all other stuff. So sticking to this marginal gains, finding small things and pieces you need to work on and improve, it takes discipline, right? And it takes a mindset so that you really want to improve.
Yeah, and we talked about this. We still have the same mindset with the father that, you know, all the time say that, you know, all the time we need to have a purpose. When we step on the court, we also always need to see if we can be a little bit better every day. And those small changes will at the end bring you to a better player. But at the same time, it's not only management. It's also, you know, the leadership of motivating the athletes and the team around the athletes to see that if you're just talking about structure and if you talk about, you know, interventions, it's one thing. But, you know, you have to look into people's eyes and you have to see how they look, you know, and how they behave and how they feel. Because if the team are tired and the energy is low, that can be a little bit, dangerous, because that can also lead into a player that is a little bit tired and not have the inner spark going on. So we always look for when to do certain things. So it's not, you can have a piece of paper, you can say, well, you know, in December we do this and in January we do this. But then you also have to take in consideration how the human that work with this, how they feel. And that's also what we put into a very important factor, is when and the timing of when we do things. If we wanted to make big changes or bigger changes, that's when the father is very concerned about, do we have time to do that? Do we have time to make these changes? And I see that he is very concerned that when you bring in a new topic, that we have time and that we don't put on too many topics at the same time. So he's, because he was a player himself, he feels this really important, not to be too, to be too interested to always come up with new things, but, you know, find the timing to do it.
Yeah, this is so relatable, because, you know, people are very different, and you have one player and a team. Looking at the sales manager, they have 5 or 10 players, and that's the team, right? And it's easy to be too keen and to, you know, all the answers to things, and you want to put everything in motion, and maybe you want to do everything the same motion on the whole team, and then all of a sudden it doesn't really flow that way. So seeing the player, seeing the salesperson is key, I think.
Yeah, and the empathy that you feel sometimes, you start always as asking people how are you, and you want to actually know that how they feel and how they are, and that they are interested in and they are. And they're ready for new initiatives. Because if you in your sales department always come up with new things before you feel that the intervention or the task you gave them last week is done and that they have had time to do that, that's when you feel that they go a little bit like, oh, you know, I feel it's too many things. So we always talk about holding back and also making sure that we have this feeling of you did pretty good with the last task and you already felt that worked, so then you can start with the next one. So never start with a new task before you've done the one before. And if you haven't had time to really focus on one task, then maybe wait for the next one. So I think people feel a little bit stressed, and tennis players feel this a lot of time when you're coming in and you get too many things to work on. If we can give them very, very accurate, precise feedback and say, well, this is actually what you want to do and keep focusing on this, they feel very comfortable making changes. But if it's coming too often, too many, too big things, we are very concerned about that. So we are also patient, to put it that way.
Yeah, of course, that's important. And if you look back at Kasper's journey, you know, the last year and a half, he has been just going up, 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 up. And, you know, I think it was one ball away from being number one in the world when Sinner lost a match. I mean, he could woken up as number one. And then and 3 Grand Slam finals, you know, it's amazing. And he was a top 10 and now he's 11, 12. And now all of a sudden everything has changed and everybody's, he's the challenger, right?
Yeah, and he talked about that last year when he felt like a little bit more pressure and the expectations were there that, you know, now when he had the 22 was unbelievable and then expectations came in and that he said that made a little bit of a difference. Now he is a little bit, you know, it's a difference. Now you see that he started this year with a lot of wins against good players. And now in Mexico that, you know, now he's playing really well. You can see that he is more aggressive. He is playing the way he said in September that he wanted to play more attacking game and be a little bit instead of just being steady, because you have to keep what you already, of course, are good at, but you have to add something to what you do. And we can see that he's playing better, serving better, and so on. So it will be an interesting season for him.
Yeah. So the preseason and up till now, you guys have been concentrating on a couple of things, of course, and that's what you now see is playing out on the court, hopefully.
Yeah, I think we are going to talk about that. But he saw quite, you know, from 23 that, you know, the serving could be better. He said that, you know, we can look into the serve and see what we can do better. He's obviously serving okay, but there are certain part, and I will come back to that when we talk about statistic and how we measure this. But he said that quite early in the fall, he said that now we are going to look at the serve. And then he also wanted to play a little bit closer to the baseline and give the opponent a little bit less time, because if you stay 1 meter closer, the opponent, without hitting the ball harder, will have less time. So you try this, but again, it's not like just making that happen, like just move there. You have technically, tactically, mentally to prepare for those changes. So it's quite a big change, but I think he have practiced with a very big purpose on a daily basis on this, and we see differences, and I can also see people out there recognize that he looked different.
That's good. And you know, in sales, you meet competition, right? And if you lose against the competitors, you know, you have to change your game a little bit, right? You have to be in opposition, try to find the other place where you can actually beat them. And there are plenty of things. And it's quite parallel here as well.
Yeah, and we talked about this before, that if you see someone that with a big, big advantage or big weapon, you want to neutralize the situation. And what they did with Casper, you know, because of his big forehand, they found a way to neutralize this. But then instead of being just saying, well, you know, now, you know, what do I do? You have to go and see, what can I do? And we call this the arms race, you know, the ability to change. You have to find new things to be on the offense again, and you can see that he is very interested in doing that. And a lot of people give up. They say, oh yeah, they found out what my strengths were, so now but he's saying, okay, let me try this and see, and I think we have a player, and the interest that you see when he's practicing these days is huge. I mean, his energy, his ability to see that gradually he can play a little bit more closer to the baseline and getting back the advantage with his forehand, that will be interesting to see. So I think that again, this is a parallel to what you said. If you see a competitor with a big advantage, don't give up. Just see what you can next time find in your product, that where you can say, well, this is really my edge, and see how you can turn that around again to compete with your competitors. So it's a very similar thing in business and in sports.
Yeah, it is. And you have to, you know, be attacking all the time. You cannot just be attacked by the others. You have to sort of be active and find your angle, how to win that race. But we also talked about another thing, you know, AI. Everybody's talking about AI in business, and ChatGPT has come there, and some complain it's really bad, and some really say, wow, this is awesome. And what we see is we're putting this into SuperOffice, the application as well, and getting a smart assistant, and you can, you know, prompt or give instructions to it. And if you do that really well and right, then you can get massively, you can get that big edge, right? Because you're utilizing the technology that is available. And you told me something that, you know, tennis is a data-driven sport, and a lot of stuff, you know, is available for you as a coach and analyst as well. Tell us about that.
The ATP, the player organization, they opened up last year, you know, all the data that is available from top data, meaning that the level three data where you can figure out, you know, where the ball bounces, how high over the net, how fast, spin, speed, you know, everything can be measured. And by giving us that information and also have a site where we find this information, not only from Casper, but also from all the players that he's competing with, then, you know, that is like an advantage in one way. But here's a little bit of a warning, because everyone knows everything about everyone. So how do you make it happen? Because if you can't take this information and translate it and bring it into an action in practice, that's the key. That's the, you know, because if you have all this information, you have to use this as a forecast. If you just you know, go in there and you look at this and say, well, this is what you have to do right now. But more important is when you see all the information, you have to say, what do we have to do for the future based on the information we have now? The next match, the next tournament, the next half year, the next year. So the minute we look at the information and we look and see the best players and we see that they have, you know, and we bring them into between 1 and 10. And you see the Djokovic coming up with a performance rating of 9.1 and Casper is 8.3. What does it mean? You know, now you have to dive in to see what are the differences. So you will see, we talked about the serve. You will see that Djokovic is serving closer to the sidelines in serving. He is closer to both the sidelines and the service, the middle line in the service box. And that is like, it's not the speed. It's not like the spin. It's just accuracy. So AI have given us the fact that, and this is quite motivating for Casper, saying, well, you know, I can do that. But then, you know, we have to say, what do we have to do to make that happen? And that's where we go in and look at, is it a physical thing? Is it a technical thing? Is it a mental thing where you don't take a risk enough? You want to just put the ball in play? We have to find out. And I think we did a little bit of technical you know, changes based on this that will give him more accuracy. And of course, a little bit more fitness training with different things, especially the flexibility in the shoulder. And all this is part of giving him more precision on the serve. And of course, then it's up to him to practice this more and more to see that he can do this. But this is one thing that we see that is out there for everyone to see, that, you know, Djokovic, Hurkacz, very precise in the serve, and they are also then on the top of the leaderboard in serving in the world. And then we can see everything like this on ground strokes, forehands, backhands, running, what patterns of play you win and what patterns of play you are not winning. So all this is things that you can bring in, but you have to again translate and find action points that you can actually get on the court and do. Because
So is the AI helping you to do that, or is that where you come in as the analyst?
No, the AI doesn't do that priority. That's what we do. So that's based on this. That's what I do. And again, we talk with Christian. We say, well, this is what we see, and then he say, well, you know, we find a priority. What do we do first, and so on. So it's quite interesting stuff, but it gives us a little bit of help. But again, remember that everyone has the same information. So it's like, I think that the job that we do is being better forecasters. You know, look into the future, look into see what do we need to work on based on what the other guys can do better or what Casper is better at compared to what they do. For example, topspin, you see that he have a tremendous topspin compared to all the other guys. So taking advantage of that is for sure something that he will keep doing. So now we try to look at this in the team, and of course, again, we don't jump to conclusions too quick. We don't do too many things, but it's interesting to look at all the data and see, and you know, if you look at some of the, you know, some of the diagrams, you will see every forehands and backhand bounces on the court within the air. So it's thousands and thousands of marks on the court where you see, and then you can select from them, from different matches, from different you know, surfaces, how it looks like in clay compared to hard court and grass. So it's interesting. It takes time. You just have to smile when you see this, because it's a little bit more work. But if you spend time beneficially, and again try to figure out the priority, that's what we have to do.
Yeah, and of course there is one big thing here, is that you can have so much AI, but it's not a robot on the court, right? It's still a human, and it's still a person with emotions, and two people actually. So you might have a game plan, but you know, if the other person doesn't let you run your game plan, then you have to be adaptive, and based on the situation, you have to do something else. And you know, you don't have the AI with you there, so you have to have a lot of practice, you know, to understand which situation you're in, and then move to the right way to try to solve
it. I'm glad that you bring up this, because you know, the Christian is very concerned about this. This is a game, so even if you know a lot about your opponent, the opponent might react and might play the game differently next time you play them. So you have to be aware that it's not like a static game. You know, it's a game with thousands of varieties. But again, I also think that, you know, we need to do this in business and in sports. We have to say that we have all the digital information, but you have to translate it into a person that's an analog person with a lot of feelings and a lot of also they also want to be in making the decisions. You're not making the decisions for them. You give them information. They have to be the one taking the decisions, and the autonomy in being a sales officer, or you are an athlete on the tennis court, we have to give them information, but they are the one making it happen. And that part of working with people, understanding who they are, when to give them this information, the timing of this is crucial. So one thing at a time.
Yeah, and I think we touched on that the last time we spoke, Evan, that, you know, you might be five or six resource persons around a player, but there is one coach, and you are channeling everything to the coach, and the coach talks to the player, right? So that they can have this control of one thing at a time.
Super important
methodology.
And I think that's the same. There are so many in the department in your in the super office, or when we work, I think there should be one voice, or at least one language, because there are so often that, you know, language and terminologies when you work across, not always people receive the message the same way. So if you try to channel all this information into something where you have like one voice, one philosophy, and this is how we do it here, it's better for everyone. It's better for the team. It's better for the athlete. It's better for the person receiving that message in a way, so it feels safe. And when you're safe, you feel that, okay, now I know what to do. And it's easier, instead of getting too many inputs from all over, that might be sometimes a little bit frustrating. And it might be something where you don't build confidence, because it's all about confidence, and confidence can be killed in seconds. So if we have examples, not in the team of us, but we have examples around us in other teams where we see players coming in with new coaches and new team all the time, and you see that they lose the confidence, and then you have to build confidence again by bringing in the same language, the same philosophy. And if you go through the same coach, and Christian is in charge and the mastermind behind this, we try to, and sometimes he will say, hey, Eivind, you can tell Casper or you can tell the fitness coach, yeah. but he's the yeah. one to decide when and how to tell him.
We're actually, you know, practicing on what we call situational selling. And the thing there is that because you might have a hypothesis and a goal with a sales meeting, right? And maybe if you had one person in that meeting, you can control what they're interested in because you prepared and planned and you know what the agenda is. But what we see is that a lot of sales processes involves not only one person. It's not only one decision maker, it's a group of people, like a buying committee. And, you know, around the table, you might be have one person really digging into the financials of the deal. You know, show me why I should buy this. What is the return on investment, etc. He couldn't see that. And then on the other side, you have maybe a very practical person who wants to see features and demonstrate this to me. You know, total different things. And then the third person maybe say, hey, we're looking at another system that has these capabilities. So being a salesperson needs that you have to understand in what situation you are in that match. Mm. And then you have to sort of, okay, you have to try to at the same time understand, okay, what is the rationale behind these questions coming up and how do I tackle that? And you have to train on these situations. You have to train that, okay, if this is the key, then I have a tool in my toolbox that I can address that, because you only do the only thing that you normally do, you're going to miss out, right? You're not going to win those the trust of those people.
It's super important, this kind of feedback, this kind of communication. And you said it, I think communication and feedback is a skill that you can practice quite and get better at every day. And you also need to know in the room and in the team you're working, who are they? Are they visual learners? Are they verbal learners? Are they kinesthetic people that are putting more feelings into this? And it's super important when you communicate and you come up with a rationale saying, well, this is what we are going to do. You will have someone saying, well, you know, tell me why. But other ones will say, okay, I see what you're saying. And they will buy it immediately. But the importance is to understand that you can work with a lot of different people. And it's good to have different people in your team that see things differently and learn differently. And don't look at that as like, we don't want, you know, to have this person because they ask questions all the time. But when you get that question within a team, you try to say, you know, we get that all the time. But sometimes we say that, let me find it out. We don't have to answer it immediately. And train within the team to be open-minded, to have a high ceiling where you can say, well, you know, we want to be open-minded, and we need the growth mindset instead of a locked mindset. And again, train and see and be open-minded within the team and see the strength and understand some of the weaknesses. But weaknesses, you know, we all have weaknesses, so we don't over focus on the weaknesses, but we build on the strength within the team. So I think be open-minded, work hard, and practice those things that the team need together, and see what you can do. I think working with different people that I've been doing for many, many years in sports, I think we need those differences to grow. And sometimes that's really good. Don't think that have the same people with the same personalities as you have is the only way. I think that
that's really
important part.
Definitely. Great. So, you know, it's time flies here, 27 minutes. Wrapping up, Eivind, in that process Casper is in when he's challenging, he's coming back. What's he thinking now? Is he offensive for the 2024 season?
Yeah, I think he looks very energetic. I think that he, through those things we see from, you know, having some video messages from him, I think that he looks very sharp. I think that the energy, you know, can really will move us all in the right direction. It's we find that source inside where we wake up in the morning and say, well, I'm willing to go an extra mile. And I see that from him now, that when I even see him beside the court, but also on the court, the way he's moving on the court, the way he wants to try to add a new dimension into his game. So I'm very curious about the next month where we see him playing next week in Acapulco, then in Indian Wells in California, and then in Miami. This tournament in Mexico and the next three is quite interesting to see where he is compared to last year. And then we can talk again to see, but I feel that he had done together with the coaches and us. I think that he have done a tremendous job, and the way we want people around us to do, to say, I want to go and try to become a little bit better. And if everyone can do that on a daily basis, just add one thing. You don't have to forget what you are good at from before, but you add one thing, and that's what we have to do in the team, because I have to learn more about AI. I have to learn more about how to make things happen and come up with solutions and priorities. So, you know, even if I've done this for many years, I have to learn new things to stay in the team.
Yeah, you have to be curious and challenge yourself every day. But now he's in the semis in singles and doubles, so we cross our fingers. One final question for me, because, you know, in tennis, it goes up and down, right? But as a team and as a coach and in sales, it goes up and down, because you can lose a couple of deals and you might not reach your budget for a month. And then you have the quarter, you know, you always have to be on top. What is your best advice for the as a team lead to keep that calm, even in tough times, to come through it? As more strength and when the quarter is up.
I think for myself, and it is never take shortcuts. Don't think that you, even if you have done things for a long time, don't take those shortcuts, because I think we when you stay there and sometimes people around me ask, oh, Casper lost or he won, you know, how are you? And I said, well, you know, I'm just doing my very best job on a daily basis. And the inner voice is when you do things and you know that you've done your best, that's when you know I couldn't do anymore. I didn't take a shortcut. So I think we, when you are in performance like we are, I think we, everyone is like trying to accomplish one new thing every day, try to work hard, even if you have done it for a long time. I think I just keep watching matches, even if I could just read statistics. I like to see matches, because if I stop watching matches and I don't like watching matches, and I have an inner voice that, oh, now I have to go up in the evening at 3 o'clock tonight to see the match. You know, I can maybe just read the statistics tomorrow. Mm-hmm. No, you know, don't end up in that division. I think we every day try to be a better version of yourself, and that give you the inner motivation. Inner motivation is master things better, do things together with other people. And on a daily basis, try to make decisions yourself. Try to be your own chief, to say, no, lead yourself in the right direction. And those three things give most of us inner motivation, and then it's easy to go to work, even if it's 3 o'clock at night.
Yeah, and quality never goes out of fashion.
Well, that is quality. Right. Okay.
Great. Well, thanks, Evan, for bringing some insights into this. It's always cool to have your pitch from the court and the sports side to the business world. And I really want to have you back on a later stage. So thanks.
Thank you for inviting me, and see you soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's a wrap, guys. I hope you liked the episode. And if you did, please give us a rating in your webcast player or on Spotify or Apple Webcast. And tell a friend about us. And that way we can grow our community and get some more interest around the podcast. If you have a wish for a guest or a topic, you can send it to me on hc@superoffice.com. Until next time, be curious and start moving. Thanks a lot, guys.